Korach, who now rebels against Moshe Rabbeinu. Chumash tells us that the reason of the rebellion is they gathered together against Moshe and against Aaron and said to them, Rav Lachem, it's too much for you. Ki kol ha'ida kulam toshim, for the entire assembly, all of them are holy, and Hashem is among them. Why do you exalt yourselves over the congregation of Hashem? Moshe sent forth to Datan Aviram a little bit later in the parsha, and he said, you know, let's talk. No, we shall not go up. You know, it's bad enough you brought us here. Moreover, you did not bring us to land flowing with milk and honey. Even if you would gouge out the eyes of those men, we shall not go up. And again, they argue the same argument. Yet you seek to dominate, even to dominate further. At least they're rare. There is this argument of rulership, of domination of Moshe and Aaron, of these individuals. And we know, as source number two points out, that what was the ability for Korach to make such a strong statement and think he could get away with it? So the Chazal tell us Korach was a wise man. How could he have acted so foolishly? His eyes caused him to err. He saw prophetically that among his offspring would be the prophet Shmuel, who was as great in time as Moshe and Aaron combined. And therefore he felt that, you know what, he'll be vindicated, not knowing that it will be through his children who will do tshuva that Shmuel will come. And we know that Korach had many different, really, sub-arguments. This was the one he, you know, proliferated in the public. There was this jealousy of his younger cousin Elitzafan, who became the Nasi. There was a jealousy of Aaron. Everyone had their own little bit of jealousy that brought it all together, that they came to argue against Moshe and Aaron, really a rebellion, that they wanted different leadership and different rulership. The response of Moshe Rabbeinu is what I want to focus in on, and the Rashi. This distressed Moshe greatly, Pasuk Tetvav, and he said to them, do not turn to their gift offering. I have not taken even a single donkey of theirs, nor have I wronged even one of them. The response of Moshe Rabbeinu is, I've done nothing wrong. And to show that I've done nothing wrong, I will say is, I have not even taken a donkey among them. I haven't even taken a donkey? Says Rashi, even when I traveled to Egypt and I placed my wife and sons on a donkey, when I had every right to take one of their donkeys, I took only one of my own. The greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu was he never took a donkey? Hello! Moshe Rabbeinu's face shone. He spoke to Hashem panim upon him, face to face. This was his greatness? I mean, like, if you were to mention, tell me the resume of Moshe Rabbeinu, what was his greatness? You would tell me he didn't take a donkey? Please! And as the Shari Chaim points out, technically, he was in Midian. What was he going to ask? Did the Jews send him a donkey from Egypt? Like, what's going on here? Further, the end of 5 in Esh Tamid. What does this have to do with the argument of Korach? And in fact, the Drash Tavi furthers this question. There's no record of Korach ever having complained that Moshe Rabbeinu took unfair advantage of the people for his own gain. His entire complaint concerned the appointment of Aaron as the Kohen Gadol and the appointment of Litzafan ben Uziel as the chieftain of Gad families. He claimed that Moshe Rabbeinu had chosen these men without having received specific instructions from Hashem, as Rashi explained in his comment. Why didn't the Moshe Rabbeinu feel necessary to stress they had never taken anything from the people? What's also interesting to note, and this is brought in Source 6, is that the Haftarah for Parshat Korach is Shmuel's final address to the people, so to speak. And there's a clear connection between the Parsha and the Haftarah. When Shmuel says, Hineni anubi neged Hashem, answer me in front of God. Eshur mi lakachti, whose ox have I taken? Vechamur mi lakachti, and whose donkey have I taken? When I've gone from city to city, did I ever ask for travel expenses? No. Again, very interesting. Shmuel Hanavi, Moshe Rabbeinu, whose donkey have I ever taken? What is this significance of the donkey? And further, the Hebrew is very fascinating. It doesn't say, well, In Shmuel it says, the chamur mi lakachti, whose donkey did I take? The language in our pasuk is nasati, have I raised up, right? Which donkey, Moshe Rabbeinu says, have I nasati, have I raised up? That phrase, should have said lakachti, like in Shmuel, also needs to be understood. So we need to understand a little bit, what was it that Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to get across when he said, I've never taken any donkey? What is the message of the donkey? What's the donkey's directive? What does it mean that he that this was a response to Korach? What was Korach arguing about that this was the appropriate response? How do we understand the word nasati? What's this whole idea of Korach being duped by that vision of Shmuel Hanavi? And again, Shmuel is the one who doesn't take the donkey later on. We need to try to understand this whole picture. I will make mention of the Menachem Tzion learns this pasuk on a level of drush, on a homiletical level, where he says, "Lo chamur achad mehem nasati, velo harayoti et achad mehem." I did not lift up one donkey, and I didn't hurt anybody. It's a very often in political figures, and we've seen this. Adayom Hazeh, my friend, some of you have elections coming up soon. This stares you in the face. There was nobody who was on the level of a chamor, of a donkey. Use your imagination what that level is. Nasati. And that person I raised up to be on the level of an important official. Velo hariyoti et echad mehem. I didn't take somebody who was deserving and I lowered them. So here Moshe Rabbeinu is saying that you're arguing that I have taken people unfairly. I'm telling you, I've never raised up somebody who didn't deserve it, and I never lowered somebody who was not deserving to be lowered. Leaving that aside, the first and foremost lesson that we learn from these psukim is what the Das Torah of Yerucham Levovitz points out in source number 9, where he says, Moshe Rabbeinu, hearing these words, Achad bidvarim hachizarim. These are like the strangest words. You're accusing me of lording over and being, you know, the ruler. I mean, this is crazy, right? Moshe Rabbeinu put his life on the line for Klai Yisrael. Lording over who? Al tivahel lashiv ein hadavar bi v'chasam. Says Rabbi Rucham, don't answer. This is crazy, and drop it at that. Ella chapes b'masecha u'bechon otam. Rather, introspect. If someone comes and tells you something, stop and say, is there any basis for this? Like, why am I hearing this now? Am I supposed to learn something from this? That introspection behooves each and every one of us. And it's that introspection that Moshe Rabbeinu is as if went through his entire life and said, you know what, I'm not guilty to the extent that I haven't even taken a donkey. I mean, like, I can't even think of anything that I've done that they would even come and claim this against me. That, the donkey, is to, like, what extent Moshe Rabbeinu did this cheshbon ha-nefesh, this introspection. And you find this, Rabbi Yisrael Mitzalant says, about David HaMelech, V'kamim alai mirayim tishmana osnai. When my enemies, the people who didn't like me, came upon me, tishmana osnai, my ears listen. Is there any truth to what they're saying? Let me at least listen closely. And that is the first lesson that we learned today, is that even if it's the craziest thing a person accuses you of, stop. What grain of truth may be there? And at least do that cheshbon ha-nefesh. What was the cheshbon ha-nefesh that Moshe Rabbeinu did that was a response to Korach? So Rav Wolbe at Chumash points out in 11. Moshe was declaring that he was free from any negios, from any bias in his role as B'nai Israel's leader, because he did not enjoy monetary benefit from his position. He could have declared that he put his life on the line for B'nai Israel's sake, or that he devoted measurable time and effort to them, which gave him the right to ask Hashem not to accept their offerings. However, the true test of a person's greatness is how he acts regarding money. Moshe is claiming that his position as a leader did not even take money for travel expenses, and he was therefore worthy of Hashem's backing. And that is why when Moshe Rabbeinu took the donations for the Mishkan, he didn't have pockets on his robe in order that no one should suspect that he was pocketing the money. Because we know, when we talk about a leadership taking advantage, there are certain areas that a why a person would want to become a leader, to lord it over, power, to have honor, kavod, and money. Moshe Rabbeinu's responding and saying, I didn't get any money from this, and I didn't even get any honor from this. There's nothing I'm gaining from the fact that I'm being a leader, that you're saying, wow, you know, you're taking advantage of the people in this leadership position. In what way? Right? Shema Olam, Rav Zadel Epstein, source 12, Lo Hishtamesh Bahem Afilu B'davar Pa'ut Kirichivat Chamor. Lachain Yachol Ayalio Batuach Shelo Nichshal B'Itnasot. If he didn't even take a donkey, he says to himself, I can be rest assured that I never lorded it over anybody else. And this is a introspection that is incumbent upon all of us. It's an introspection that the Mesillas Yesharim in the 10th chapter of Mikiel speaks about. That in our lives, we have to ask ourselves, am I above board? Am I doing what I'm doing really l'shem shamayim, or do I have a negiah? Do I have some self-interest in what am I doing? The Kiyos, which follows Rizos and Zahiros, is a purity of action, of thought. It means examining our deeds, 14, with the utmost care to ensure they're free of personal bias. That it's really for the sanctification of God's name. And this is true in continuing in 16 and 17, where Yaakov Hillel Sefer ascending the path, which the Yetzer Hara, when he wants us to do an Aveira. So, you know, he works on this. Like, you know, it's, he says to us, you know, it's really not really a sin, and really in our case it's really permitted, and even if it is a sin, it's not such a big sin. We're Nogaya Badavar. We have a personal interest. And when we have a personal interest, it's hard to be Mamish L'Shem Shamayim. And this is why so often when we have decisions to make in life, and all of us encounter decisions constantly. Some are minor, some are major. We have to ask ourselves, what is motivating us to make this decision? Is it coming from a place of self? Or is it coming from a place, this is the correct thing to do? My friends, sometimes the line is very, very thin. You know, somebody this week asked me the following question. They're donating the Hanosa Sefer Torah in memory of their parents, in-laws, and the shul that they belong to have 20 Sifrei Torah. So do they donate it to the shul that they're in, which have 20 Sifrei Torah, because they want to be able to see, and at times maybe even the shul will use their Sefer Torah? Or do they donate it to a shul which has no Sifrei Torah and can really use the Sefer Torah? And again, there's a side to both sides, right? The emotional element where person was sewed the mantle for over a year. The emotional investment in the Sefer Torah, forget the financial, it's major. So you want to see that Sefer Torah being used. You want to have that connection. On the other hand, 20 Sefer Torah, how often is it going to be used? Ever also donated in that shul and also wants to see it being used. On the other hand, there could be a place which really could use it. These are questions that need to be asked. These are questions that need to be examined. These are questions of what is motivating a person. And this is why Rav Weissblum in Haras Derech in 18 points out, Negiya Yotzeren Hara Tenter. When you have a Negiya in something, when you have a personal interest, then suddenly a lot of things become clouded and you've lost that vision. V'yesh b'kocha shol hara tenter l'chasod alachait. And therefore you can even have a korach who foresees that Shmuel or Naviv will come from him, but he doesn't see, well, how is that possible if he's arguing against Moshe? He doesn't see, well, maybe he's wrong. When a person has a negiah, a personal vested interest in something, it can distort even Ruach HaKodesh, it can distort even divine inspiration. This is that power of what Ruach HaKodesh, the power of negiahs, is all about. And that is why a person has to be above board in every area. And that is what the Chochmah and Matzvum of Igbi is, again from Yerucham, points out, where Moshe Rabbeinu was able to say, I am above board, where there isn't even a mechse, doesn't even appear that there's even a question. to be on that level of Moshe Rabbeinu is very, very difficult. How many times can we say, you know, we make a large donation to a yeshiva? Are we really doing it for the yeshiva? Are we doing it for the kavod, the glory, the honor, the name that's on whatever you put the name on? Like, what are we doing it for? I understand there's the ultimate good, great. But to be able to say, I am above personal considerations, that was the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu. And this is really the first lesson of this parashah for us, this study. And when we're doing things, what are our negios? What are our mindset? Why am I sending my child to? Why am I doing X? Am I doing it because everyone will say, wow, what about chesed you are? And you see she's involved in this project and that project. And people will just talk about you, how special you are, how amazing you are. Or do you really believe in this project? And part of the litmus test is to do things where no one knows that you're doing it. And that is a sense that you're really doing a L'shem Shemayim and not for the personal interest. And my friends, it's a major challenge. 21. Rav David Hofstadter takes this one step further. He says, it's clear that the root cause of Korach's rebellion against Moshe and Aaron was his own hunger for honor and prestige, without regard for its effect on the nation. Therefore, he attacked Moshe for appointing Aaron to be Kohen Gadol, claiming he had chosen simply him because he was Moshe's own brother. The truth was that whenever Moshe Rabbeinu appointed anybody, it was obviously according to the command of Hashem. Korach accused Moshe of having the asterisk in 21, the very fault for which he himself was guilty, embodying Chazal's dicta, whoever faults others is in fact accusing them of his own failures, right? We know when you point one finger at a person, you're really pointing three at yourself. Korach's desire was to become a leader, but his ambition was purely for his own benefit and not for the benefit of others. This is what upset Moshe Rabbeinu so much. Had Korach come with a complaint about some trait that he, Korach, had perfected himself, there had been room for discussion. But to accuse others of a fault when they are absolutely innocent, while the accuser himself is clearly guilty of that very fault, displays exceptional brazenness. Therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu declared, I did not even take a donkey from any one of them. I certainly did not make myself the leader for my own benefit, or in order to take advantage of others for the sake, for my sake or the sake of my family. What's more, even when I had every right to use public funds, I did not do so. I paid for my needs out of my own pocket. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu is saying to Korach, what you are really interested in is not justice, but your own honor and your own gain. And the Drash Dovid goes on and explains that the real beauty of a leader is that it's not about them. We know the 70 elders that were chosen to have the Ruach Nevuah, the prophecy spirit upon them, Parshas Balosha, were the 70 people who were the taskmasters in Egypt who said, let us be hit rather than hitting the Jews who did not meet the quota. That's a Jewish leader. We're not in it for ourselves. We're in it for the people. And these are people who will work Yomam Valayla. You hear stories of people who work tirelessly over and above beyond for whatever organization, whatever they're working for, not for the salary, not for the amount of money that they get, not even for the honor, but because I believe in the cause that I'm working for, and I'm ready to put in my all for that cause. And you see this, for example, just because it's my field, I see this among my colleagues and teachers, the teachers who I work with, who will be spending hours with emails and phone calls with girls without getting compensated for it. Why? Because that's what Jewish leadership is about. When another Jew needs help, you're there to help, and it's not about, well, how much are you paying me per hour, and how much does everyone have to know how many hours I put in? It's not about that. It's about, this is the message that Moshe Rabbeinu is not only teaching Korach, it's teaching you and me. You want to know what Jewish leadership is about? And compare it to the leadership in the world around us, which is so corrupt, enough said. It's about not my personal glory, not my personal honor, not my money. It's about mamish being l'shem shamayim, hopefully, and how to be able to help others. You know, there's a very sweet story that I just shared with my little group at Kabbalat Shabbat. Rav Avram Ganovsky, I believe, from Bnei Brak, he was once passing by a street on his way back from learning. He was Rosh Yeshiva, and he hears little Kinderlach crying, And he recognized that this is obviously Kinderlach who are left alone, right? It wasn't like a parent or a babysitter was there. And indeed, that's what happened. And this is Welcome to Israel story. The parents decided they had to go shopping for an hour or two, and they left the kids, locked the door, and they figured the kids would be sleeping. And obviously, you know, the kids woke up very soon afterwards, ha, ba, ima, and when no one answers, it, you know, just escalates the screaming. And then all the other kids woke up, and they're all screaming. And he runs around to stores asking for a ladder. It was on the third floor or fifth floor, and no one had a ladder. He runs home. He gets a ladder. Imagine Rosh Yeshiva walking, running through the streets with a ladder. He climbs up the ladder to the children's bedroom, which have sarigim, which have bars on them, and he talks the children through the bars and says, don't worry, I'll stay with you till your parents come home. He brought with him some candy from his Rebbetzin, gave the kids candy, and there are pictures of him sitting on this ladder for like 2 hours telling the kids stories so they would calm down till the parents came home. And then he made no big deal about it, got down on his ladder and went home. That's a great story encapsulating Jewish leadership. Someone's in pain. It could be little children who are afraid, who are nervous. You're there for them, right? If I need to take a ladder and talk to them through the window, that's what I'll do. That is the difference between what Korach was envisioning, you know, everyone around me and all the honor, and Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, whatever it takes, I'm there, ready to say to Datam Aviram, let's make peace. I'm not standing on my own honor. And in fact, as the Esh Tamid Rav Druk points out, the third paragraph, he says, "Aval ha'emes hi ki Moshe v'Aaron lo yachasu l'tafkidem kisrara klal ela ka'avtos." Moshe and Aaron didn't look at this as rulership. They looked at it as being a slave. Quote, "Ki Moshe v'Aaron," the squiggly line, "Ra'u tafkidem kemanhigim lo b'tvor tzraravi natsura l'tzibur kemo chashvu korach v'datam." It wasn't a question that they were going to lord it over like Korach thought and Datam Avira, "Ela ka'avtos," but rather, "I'm enslaved to the needs of the people. Ki amanhig amitihu eved la'am," because a real leader is enslaved to the needs of the people. "V'chol da'ato machshavato netuna lahem v'lo la'atzmo klal." A real leader is thinking about what do the people need, and it's not about themselves. That's leadership. That's the end. Esh Tamid talks about in 24. Aaron, who's told Krav al Mizbeach, beginning of Shemini, we spoke about this a few years ago, come to the Mizbeach, and he says, I can't, I feel, you know, like I'm not worthy. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, it's because you feel that way, that's why you're in this job. If you would say, sure, I'm ready to go, you know, they say this halacha by, you know, somebody asked the person to be a shliach tzibur. You refuse. You know, it's not like you're running. And then you, you accept. This is what it's about. It's that that busha, that reticence, that shows that you are not here to show how great you are and to rule over, but to show how you are humble and how you are here ready to do what the people need. And this is what 25 Ayot Be'er Torah V'chol Bale Machloki Kana Yumeshuchadim Lachem Yichdei Latzlich Levatel Zchutam Sarich Shleimut Benoseh Zah Shal Shocha V'Negius. And that's why, because everyone here had a negiah, everyone here had a personal vested interest, right? The tribe of Reuven came because they wanted to be the Bechor, and this one came because whatever, each one of them had a personal agenda. That is why the only way Moshe Rabbeinu could say, don't accept their sacrifice and don't listen to them, is because I am free from any personal agendas. Al Tefen El Minchatam. Moshe Yaroe Yafet, who lo mishuchad, he was not at all subjugated to their whims. Which helps us explain the Tam Vidas, who says, Rav Sternbach in 27, Nire Mikan, Shemaila Gedola Hi Lamanhig Bisrael. This is why it's very appropriate for a leader, Kusha Nishmar Mikol Shemesh on the Tilat Tovad Hana, from taking any amount of pleasure, any gift, any favor. So no one should say, oh, he took a favor, and that's why he's on his side, and that's why he... Nothing. וזהו שנשאר משהו לשכח אף את מה שראוי לו, כדי שלא יוכלו להטיל ספק בניקיון כפיו, so there wouldn't be a shame שמיים. And the Eish Tamid Rav Druk, his father, Drash Mordechai, Rav Druk 29, echoes this in terms of another element of Hakaras HaTov. That when you take something from somebody else, then you owe them. You have a debt of gratitude. And that debt of gratitude makes you responsible to be nice to them, to be good to them. And this is the whole idea about what shochat is. Why is shochat? Why is bribery so bad for a judge? Because it's not just that the judge is, you know, affected by the $100 bill. You know, you can say the judge can go beyond the $100. It's more than that. When a person gives you $100, you feel indebted to that person. That sense of indebtedness, that sense of Hakaras HaTov, of gratitude, is what is the shochad, is what the bribery is. And that's why you have stories in the Gemara of a rabbi crossing a bridge and another man helping him cross the bridge. And then later that man comes up to litigate. The rabbi says, I can't judge your case, but I didn't give you anything. You did. You helped me out. I have a Hakaras HaTov to you. I have gratitude to you. I owe you something. In fact, I'll say that one of the ways I got one of my kids into school that during the course of the year, I had given this principal a ride back from the hospital visiting her students. And then later that year, it happened to be I wanted to get my child into that school, not knowing it then when I gave her the ride. And a very difficult time getting my child into the school. And I finally walked into the school myself to see what I could do. And the principal saw me as I walked in. It was like orchestrated mamish from heaven. It was like you couldn't have planned it better. It's like this larger-than-life play. As I walked in, no one else was around. She was walking through the halls. She recognized me from the two times that I'd given her a ride over the year. And she said to me, Gveret Smiles, because you gave me a ride, I have to have a Hakaras HaTov to at least meet with you and talk to you. And now, 8 years later, my daughter graduated, Baruch Hashem, last year from this school. That is the extent of a Hakaras HaTov. That's a Jewish mitzvah. Someone does you a favor. Even though it's nothing to do with you, you give someone a ride, I have to meet with you. This is why a leader has to be very careful not to take any gifts, because they're going to owe it to this person, like in this case, where this person felt, this principal, that she had at least hear me out and meet my child and take it from there. So my friends, you hear something like this and you say, oh my gosh, does that mean that a leader can never take any gifts from anybody? Does that mean this principal should have always, you know, gone 2.5 hours on a bus rather than taking a ride from, you know, from somebody? Like, to what extent can you go crazy? You know, somebody who heard this year live, whose husband is in the chinuch business, is Rosh Yeshiva, so she was telling me that she once went to a funeral where this man who died worked for the government. And the son who was masbid him said, my father was so careful that if he would take a pen home from the office, he would only use that pen. Right? Remember what a pen is? I know it's going to be outdated soon. Some of us still have a memory of a pen. Only use that pen for work. And no one else in the family could touch that pen. So she said to me, when I came home for the funeral, I said, my gosh, my husband brings home pens from yeshiva. And I say, you know what? We give so much to the yeshiva, and what's the problem taking a pen? And what's the problem taking a ride? And what's the problem, like, where do you draw this line? Like, I can't take anything from the yeshiva, I can't benefit at all, my husband can't take a ride from anybody. So that's why we have a second level. The first level is, Moshe Rabbeinu says, I'm above nikiyos. I have no personal vested interest. I haven't taken anything from anybody. I don't have a personal relationship with anybody. I don't owe anything to anybody. No one can say I've sided with anybody. I took this one from this one. I didn't take it from that one. In fact, they say, the Sfarim say, that why were the chatzotros, why were the trumpets used? Why did Moshe Rabbeinu just send out, you know, messengers when it's time to leave, so that no tribe should say, well, I got called second, and he got called first, so he's more important. Nothing, everything that worked in the Midbar was to show that there is no favoritism. There is no rulership. Everybody is equal. Everybody is beloved. That was the goal of Moshe Rabbeinu. So the question becomes, well, is that what we model we need to follow in our lives? That we should never, you know, as a teacher, I should never ask a student, could you help me with my books from the car or help me with whatever project I need? Is that what it means? So we come to the second level, my friends, which is going to turn this on its head. And then Ritz Hashem touch on the third level as well. The Be'er Moshe, the Usher Bracha Rebbe from Bnei Brak, so brings a Gemara that says the following. Gemara Brachos Yudam and Beis. Abaye said, if you wish, you may say, as Rabbi Yitzchak, who said, one who wishes to derive benefit, harotze lehenod yehenet, from the kindness of others may derive such benefit, as we learn from the practice of the prophet Elisha, who accepted lodging from the Shunammite woman. But one who does not wish to derive any benefit at all from the kindness of others need not accept such benefit, as we learn from the practice of Shmuel HaRamati. Says the Be'er Moshe, there are two models. There's the model of Elisha, who did accept benefit. This woman made for him a house, you know, like a little attic, and a bed, and a table, and a lamp. She fed him. He benefited. Or Shmuel, who did not benefit at all. And he says, B'ram the asterisk in 30, Haru lanu b'zeh, Shaidei shatamid chacham, Ne'neh ma'cheirim. This is so important. When a tamid chacham, when a scholar, gains benefit from others, Gareim hu lahem schut, it gives the people from whom he got this favor a merit. L'fi shayadu mekaimim hei mitzvah shachzakas haTorah, because they give him the mitzvah of supporting Torah. So that when you give a Talmid Chacham money, when you give him a ride, when you do him a favor, you get a schus, you get a merit. You are supporting a great Talmid Chacham. Shagam haTalmid Chacham shutaf aleim l'mitzvah zu. Omnam hakavanah tzricha liyot Torah l'shem shamayim. However, it has to be mamish, you know, l'shem shamayim, for the sake of heaven. And you see, my friends, a gevaldik word from the Sefer Charedim, who says the mitzvah birkas kohanim. It's not just the kohanim, the priests, who get the mitzvah when they bless the people. Right now, it's Israel. We have this every day. I benefit Baruch Hashem almost every Shabbos. I'm in shul and chutz la'aretz, you benefit from less often, but Klal Yisrael she'omed v'shomea birkas kohanim mishum shebizeh notenu l'kohen afshur l'kayim et ha-mitzvah. We, the people, are part of this mitzvah. Why? Because we weren't there, right? There was no one answering to this bracha, no one to bless, and they would have no one to bless. So there is a certain aspect of partnership. The kohen gets the mitzvah, and we're part and parcel, connected. A shutaf. We are a partner in this mitzvah, because we enable him to benefit. Korach had a different view. He held like Shmuel. He held, no, you should not benefit at all. And this is what bothered him about Aaron and Cohen. And if you're familiar with the Medrash, talks about one of the things, right, the famous Midrashim of them. Korach dresses people up in a talsha kulot tchelet, right, all blue, do you need a tzitzit? And in a house that's full of svarim, do you need a mezuzah? Those are the classic ones. But there's another story that Korach comes about this almana, this poor woman who finally has produce. And what happened? The priest comes and takes his portion. And the lady comes and takes his portion. And the first of the shearing of the sheep, the Kohen takes. And this poor lady, this widow, is left with nothing. That's what bothered Korach. Korach is one of the richest people in the world. Say Korach and Haman were one of the two richest people that ever existed. Korach said, let me be the high priest. I don't need any gifts. I won't be beholden to the people. This was what it means that he saw Shmuel in the future. He says, I'm a holding like the Shita of Shmuel HaNavi, who didn't take anything from the people. Moshe Rabbeinu, you should have me instead of Aaron. And we see that Hashem sided on the side of Aaron. We are the end of Parshas Korach, are the Matan of Kehuna, the 24 gifts that you give to the Kohen. So you ask, well, why is that here? So you say, you know, the idea is that after he finished talking about how Aaron's the priest, this is what he deserves. It's much deeper than that. Moshe Kadosh Baruch Hu's teaching us that it's important to give challah and reshit hageiz and all of these things to the Kohen, because our responsibility and our job is to support the Kohen, is to support the Talmidei Chachamim. That is what it's all about. And this is why, in 36, that we know Korach was one of the people that carried the Aron. But the Aron really carried itself. That was his philosophy. The Aron could carry itself. To Tamidei Chachamim, right, who represent the Aron. Scholars should carry themselves. You shouldn't support the guys in Kollel. Let them carry themselves. But you missed it, Korach. The Aron did fly in the air. There was somebody holding it. Yes, these Tamidei Chachamim are carrying themselves. But there is somebody holding that Aron. There has to be someone who's going to be maxing, who's going on some level be responsible to hold these, to support these people. And that is why in 37, Yaakov Avinu, who foresaw Korach and his Shita of, you know, let them, you know, fend for themselves, so to speak. Leaders, Tamidei Chachamim, should be above the support of people so they're not influenced by the people. Yaakov Avinu says, I don't want my name connected with Korach. Why? Because Yaakov Avinu believed, Aser Sereh Lach, I'll give Meiser. He believed in the quality of supporting others. And he says, I don't want my name associated with Korach because I don't believe in what Korach is promoting. And this explains in 38, when Amalek came, they fought Yisrael by Refidim. Refidim Shirafu Yedeim in Torah. Chazal say that their hands became weakened in Torah. How do hands connect with Torah? It means that their hands became weakened in supporting Torah. Then Amalek comes. Amalek are the ones that come and say, oh, you don't need to support them. They can support themselves. Let them go out and work. That's the Amalek in us. Our responsibility. It's not a responsibility only. It's a schus. It's a merit to take the leaders, take the people who are responsible for teaching, the teachers, the leaders, the Tamidei Chachamim, the scholars, and it's our responsibility to teach them, to support them, to work with them, to have a chelik in their mitzvah. In fact, in 40, when the Pasuk says, V'lo yiyeh kikorach v'kadasa, kasher diber Hashem b'yad Moshe lo, there should never be like Korach and his people, like Hashem spoke b'yad Moshe lo, in the hand of Moshe. What is the hand of Moshe? Klomar shelo yachshov kitotel shel Korach. No one should have the mindset and the mistake of Korach. She'en tzorach l'sayeh b'dei Tamidei Chachamim. That one doesn't have to support the scholars. Ela adrava b'yad Moshe. Because this is what Moshe's hands represent. Remember in the word of Amalek? When Moshe's hands were up, then Klai Yisrael succeeded. B'yad Moshe. We have to hold up. We have to support those who need our help, our support. These people who are dedicating themselves to Torah, to promoting Torah, to spreading Torah, to be involved in Torah projects, it's our responsibility to help them. Now, my friends, comes a gewaltig vort. This is what Pshat 39, the circle asterisk, says in Noam Elimelech. This is what Moshe Rabbeinu means about the donkey. Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to melamed zchus, trying to see some positive favor and merit in Korach. Why Hashem should be nice to them and not punish them at first. V'limeitz chutz aleihem ba'omro. And he was trying to melamed zchus, finding merit. Listen closely, it's gewaltig. He's trying to protect them by saying, Lo chamor achad mahem nasati, I never lifted up one donkey. Dine keinu amahane tamichochem tzadiki minechasa, because one who provides and allows benefit from his tzadik, from his possession, as hanazo to the yehu shalobim herau chotet, gives the protection to the one who makes his donation. Leo Says Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, maybe to a certain degree I'm at fault, because I was so careful not even to take a donkey from one of them. Had I taken something from them, then that would have been a protection on them and they wouldn't have sinned. When a person supports a Talmid Chacham, it creates like a shield around that person where a person will be less prone to sin because a person is surrounded and permeated by Kedusha. Says Moshe Rabbeinu, Lo chamor achad mahem nasati, I didn't take even a donkey. You know, perhaps that was a mistake. Had I taken, that would have been a protection for them and they never would have come to this level. So now, my friends, you're probably shaking your head saying, whoa! Well, which one is it? do we have on the one hand the time that Das said a leader shouldn't take anything from his people, and you should be above board, and you should be, you know, never take a favor. And on the other hand, you have here that fakir, you should take a favor. It's a protection for the person. You should, and, you know, give to the Tamidei Chachamim. So the commentators on the bottom, 32 of the Art Scroll, note here, Meiri explains that although one is permitted to accept such favors, he must make certain to render some service to his benefactor in return, which is what Elisha did by blessing her with a child. And he notes here, and this is the key of the asterisk, for refusing such help is regarded as neither hoarding nor unfriendly behavior. Meiri qualifies it somewhat by stating that one person who only refuses a favor for good reason, if one like Shmuel is a judge and the favor will have the appearance of a bribe, otherwise turning down a preferred kindness can be seen as haughtiness. There's a very fine line here. When a person is like Shmuel Hanavi or Moshe Rabbeinu, who's also a judge, then you have to be very careful from taking bribes, because then you're affected, Akar Satov, the amount of gratitude you need to have. All of these things make you, you know, liable not to be an objective party in judging. So when you are a judge, stay away from this. People who aren't judges and people who don't have this decision-making to make, but one who's just involved in Limud HaTorah, in leading a group of people, and again, a person has to be above board, and a person has to make sure that there are no nikias here. And this is, it's a fine line. But if this is just to be mechazek a person, to strengthen a person, then it's a big schus to take from somebody else. Again, trying to repay them in any way possible, not repay them in showing them favoritism, but being able to help them in whatever way it's possible. And this is that fine, delicate line that, yes, it's a big schus to be able to take from others because you're protecting others, but you have to be careful that when you're taking it, that you are above board in why you're taking it and for what reason you're taking it, and that, as the Rav Moshe said, it's mamash l'shem shemayim, for the sake of heaven, and not for a personal, you know, reason. And again, it's a very fine line. So my friends, what we've seen so far is lo chamor chen mahem nasati, two levels. One is, I've taken nothing. I haven't been affected by them at all. I have not raised myself above them at all. I've stayed far away from them. The second level, maybe I shouldn't have. Maybe because I didn't take anything from them, they are where they're at. And that is lo chamor chen mahem nasati. Had I taken, then they would have been protected, perhaps. And there is a big inyan to support Tamidei Chachamim. Well, the Tamidei Chachamim have to ensure and make sure that it's really the same Shemayim while they're taking it, and that this partnership is a beautiful partnership. Our final level, my friends, and this is the beauty of learning, it's the Shari Chaim Rav Moshe Goldstein, 43. And he quotes here the Maharal. The Maharal notes that there are three people who rode on the Chamor. There's Avraham Avinu on the way to the binding of Isaac of the Akedah. There's Moshe Rabbeinu who rode Al HaChamor, the donkey, take his family down to Egypt. And ultimately, Melech HaMashiach is Ani Ruchev Al HaChamor, is a modest person riding on this donkey. Pasuk in Zechariah, in that area. Explains the Maharal, you know what Chamor means? Chamor means Chumriot, means physicality. These are three individuals who raise themselves above the world. Three people, Moshe, Avraham Avinu, obviously, Vayitzeh HaChutzah, Hashem took him outside, above the heavens, to look down at the stars. Moshe Rabbeinu, in the Makos, in the Teyat Yadchal Shemayim, lift your hand on the heaven, which means he's above the heaven. Mashiach as well is described that way. Korach was saying, Moshe Rabbeinu, Madua Hinasu, Al-Kahal Hashem, how come you've raised yourself up, literally, from the people? It's like you use the people as a stepping stone to grade higher. And again, lo chamor mehem nasati. That word nasati, lehit nasay, lift up. I did lift myself up by using the chamor, the donkey, of any single person. I was able, Shmuel's the same case, I was able to lift myself and raise myself up through working on myself. And this is what was special about Moshe Rabbeinu. It wasn't that he used the people as a stepping stone for his own agenda. He was above the chamor. He raised himself up without needing the people in order to do this. Rabbi Tauber, in the Inside Story, says that this is really the lesson for our lives. What is the donkey's directive? It's for us to ride above the donkey in our own lives, to use this modeling of Moshe Rabbeinu. We know that God desired, 46, that we refine and elevate the material existence, that the physical reality, whose concreteness and self-centeredness obscure our inner vision and distort our true priorities, be redirected as a positive force in our lives that we bring to light the goodness and perfection inherent in all of His creation, including and especially the lowest of His worlds, the material world. The Hebrew word for donkey is chamor, from the word chomer, material. Mashiach's donkey is a material beast harnessed, the physical directed to the higher and loftier ends. And we know that the physical and the spiritual worlds apart. And it was only a moment at Sinai that the two came together. And that explains why Avraham Avinu uses the donkey. The most Avraham could do was to harness the physical to serve the spiritual. To use the donkey to carry the bracket of 47, the accessories of his divine service. The physical remained as coarse as ever and could not directly be involved in his spiritual life. Nevertheless, Avraham Avinu took the first step and wresting the material from its inherent self-absorption by utilizing, albeit peripherally, to assist in the service of God. 48, Moshe, on the other hand, was embarking on the mission that was to culminate in the receiving of the Torah, the medium by which God empowered man to dissolve the dichotomy between, quote-unquote, the higher and lower domains. The Torah instructs us, enables us to sanctify even the most mundane aspects of our lives, to integrate our material self and environment in our spiritual goals. So Moshe used the donkey to carry his wife and children. A person's wife and children are an extension of his own self. This is the beginning of the work. Ever since, whenever a person uses the material resource to perform a mitzvah, giving money to charity, using the energy of his body to extract from his food to fuel his fervor and prayer, he refines his physical object. With such act, the physical world becomes that much more holier, that much more in harmony with its essence and function, and finally and completely shed the husk of coarseness. So Moshiach, who represents the ultimate fulfillment of Torah, himself rides the donkey of the material, for he heralds a world in which the material is no longer the lower or secondary element, but an utterly refined resource no less central and significant a force for good than the most spiritual creation. And therefore, my friends, the donkey's directive is really the same directive, just from different angles. The directive is about Nagios. Where are we coming from? Are we coming from my own personal agenda, or am I coming L'Shem Shemayim? As a leader, and a leader could be a parent, could be a teacher, could be involved in the community aspects, whatever leadership position that you're in, are you doing it for the honor? Are you doing it for the recognition? Are you doing it for the money? Are you doing it really L'Shem Shemayim? When you do it really for the sake of heaven, you divest yourself of your negios. You're involved in the spiritual and not brought down by the mundane, physical, inappropriate, kina, taiva, kavo, needs that bring a person down. When you support a Talmid Chacham, why are you supporting a Talmid Chacham? Why is a Talmid Chacham accepting the money? That it should really be L'Shem Shemayim, again, for the sake of heaven. That a person has to do this introspection. What's driving me? What's drawing me? Where am I going? Because the donkey's directive is every aspect of our life is to be able to introspect. When I take money, what am I doing with the money? What am I doing with the things in my kitchen? What am I doing with my life? How can I elevate the physical for the spiritual? How can I take what I have in my life and be able to get rid of that coarseness, rid of that physicality, and be able to elevate it for the spirituality? That when I see something nice, I'll save it for Shabbos Kodesh. I'll have, you know, the correct kavanas. When I cook, I'm elevating my potato kugel. All of this is what the donkey directive is about. Ride that donkey. Be over the chumriya, be over the physicality. Nasati, to elevate, to raise. every time we raise a little bit of the physicality into spirituality, every time our focus is on, let me do this L'Shem Shamayim, for the sake of heaven, not for me. Let me do it to bring Nachat Ruach, to bring good favor to God, not for me. Every time we do that, we're taking ourselves one step closer to the goal of what Avraham Avinu, Moshe Rabbeinu, Melech HaMashiach have it, Kadosh Baruch Hu have in mind, that perfected world, that perfected place. Korach, it's about self. It's about personal honor, personal, what he can get from it. That's the machloket with Korach. That's our argument with Korach. We have to take that Korach out of us. We have to take that aspect out of us, that self, that's so involved in ego, and be able to be, model ourselves after Moshe Rabbeinu, whose job is kol kulo l'shem shamayim, for the sake of heaven, elevating himself from the chumriyot, the donkey, the material from this world. And when we do this, Meretz Hashem will be very matzliach in bringing Mashiach Tzidkenu that one step closer. My friends, as we finish this year, as our last parsha class for Tafshin Ayivav, again, we publicly have to have a karsa tov, hodol Hashem ki tov kilom chasto, for another year of tremendous siyata d'shmaya. Each and every week, a miracle of kol kulo siyata d'shmaya, help from above. Daven, Kadosh Baruch Hu should continue and give us many, many more years of being able to put together these parshas shiurim and to learn together and, to, more importantly, to grow together in good health and in real, you know, ba'osher, with an ayin and with an aleph. Again, talking about Akaras HaTov today, my personal Akaras HaTov to each and every person who listened, because the shiur is only as good like Birkas Kohanim, to those who draw the koach, enabling the shirim to take place. So each and every one of you, my Akaras HaTov, my personal Akaras HaTov to every person in the different communities who are involved in showing this shir every week, whether it's in Rhode Island, whether it's in Brooklyn, whether it's in Queens, whether it's in Atlanta, whether it's in Detroit, whether it's in Muncie, whether it's in Cleveland, and I'm sure I left out of place. That's why it's dangerous to do this. To all those people who are involved in photocopying the sheets and preparing them and being able to show this, these people should be benched with those who are involved with Tzarchei Tzibur Be'emunah. We again thank Nala.com, YUTorah.org for putting up the shirim each and every week. Tremendous for Yashar Koach, and no words of Akaras HaTov to Chani Stein, who puts out the summaries faithfully, week in, week out, hours of work, and beautifully done, that so many people benefit week after week with these Divrei Torah at the Shabbos table, so a grace for Yashar Koach. And Mirtz Hashem will just go mala mala as we pick up in Elul and Mirtz Hashem in a few weeks. Wish everybody a healthy and productive summer.